All right, so here we are with this is what? Going native 9? That's a great number, 9. Unfortunately, Diego's not with us today. He has some other things to do, so you're stuck with me again, but I'll keep it short. Constructor, short and sweet. I wanted to first say, if you haven't watched the great sessions that we have on C9 covering the C++ event for developing Windows 8 Metro style apps, I highly recommend it. Now, I remember that epic thread we had on WRL and C++ CX. I highly recommend you watch Sridhar's WRL talk to really understand how it works and when you would use it by somebody who designed the library and implemented a lot of it. So do watch the WRL talk. But beyond any of that stuff, we really want to get C++ developers to build Metro-style applications because you're going to push the boundaries. You're going to do sort of the apex of what can be done, in my opinion, especially when you combine XAML and DirectX. And push the envelope. So go ahead and start trying that. The other talk, of course, from there that I highly recommend is the XAML plus DirectX experience. And of course, Herb Sutter's keynote, it's killer as always. I mean, it's Herb. If you haven't registered yet for C++ and Beyond, what are you waiting for? I'm going to be there with my camera. You got the three amigos. It's going to rock and roll. And I think you only have until the end of this month, which of course is May. By the way, this is probably shipping on the last day of May. So go ahead and register for that. And without further ado, I want to just talk a little bit about what is going to be the meat of this episode. Back at PDC 2010, my good friend Eric Meyer, I'm sure you know who he is, Mr. Link, Mr. RX, he promised that his team was going to make RX for native developers. So think about Native Link, for example. And it just so happens they've done this. So RXC is finally real. And I'm going to go and have a nice conversation with the developer who implemented this, Aaron Lahman, who's a wonderful chap, very articulate, and we're going to dig in to what he did, how it works. Now, you're not going to be able to get it when this airs, but that's okay. The fact of the matter is, it's been done. Native RX is real. That's rock and roll. We'll see you at the end. All right, so we are in RX World. We're with one of the newest members of Eric Meyer's team of incredible developers and creative people. You've met Bart DeSmet several times. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Aaron Lahman, who is a developer on the team working on
RX and Link for C and C++.
Nice, man. Now listen, back in PDC 2010, Eric promised that there would be an RX for C++ developers, for C, C++
I need to go
developers.
back and look at that.
Yeah. Now, I've given him a hard time, over the years for like, where is it, dude? What's going on? Because, most of his team is managed guys and functional guys, so it's really nice to see a native dude here. Talk to us a little bit about, let's jump right into this. What is RX for C++? Let's start off maybe with Link for C. Like, what are you even working on?
This started back just a couple of months ago, and Eric's like, "Hey, you're a native guy. What do you think of doing Link in C++?" And I'm like, "Well, Link is a very un-C++ thing. Like, you've got the STL and the standard algorithms, all iterator-based, and it's got this nice conceptual model to it. But it's a very imperative model. It's not the kind of literalist literate syntax that Link has." So I'm like, no. Well, if you do this and then you do that, and from there we just kind of float out until we had something that I think at least is kind of very C++-ish. It's got the native feel, value passing instead of giant heap objects and everywhere, inlineable, template-based. I look through the generated code and, oh, look, the compiler did this cool little optimization trick. I didn't even know it was going to do that
Nice.
Effect. But at the same time, it still looks a lot like Link. So you've got that literate style, and you've got C++ 11 lambdas.
Great.
And the two just kind of mix pretty nicely now.
So for the C++ developers in the audience who may not know much about Link because obviously they don't use it,
yeah.
Can you give us a little refresher on why this matters?
I'll have to channel Eric for a little bit.
Great.
So monads! No, I'm kidding. So Link is, you look at the streaming operators. You start with think of them as forward iterable or input iterable streams. And instead of looking at what operations you perform to produce a new container, like I might transform a vector, squaring all the elements into a new vector, instead you look at it as transforming the iterable container into a new iterable container. So when I say, from this vector, select, square of each element, I have now produced a new pseudo vector. Mm. In Link for C++, that's just a template wrapper structure that forwards back to the original, all just references, so it not pointers, not pointer arithmetic, just references to the original container. It relies on the C++ programmer to do the right thing. They need to make sure their vector stays alive. And then under the covers, when you iterate the pseudo vector, it forwards back to the original vector iterators. So you still have a random access pseudo vector that you can pass back to STL algorithms, but now it has the square of each element. Mm. It takes advantage of some of the concepts that Boost pioneered with expanding the iterator categories. When I square all of the elements of the original vector, I don't have an integer anymore, like an integer stored, an integer object. I've got an integer return value.
Hmm.
You can't bind references to that thing because it's a return value, like it's a temporary. It's going to go away soon. So there's some points where it stubs out to provide fake references as necessary. It's not strictly C++ standard kosher, but it's no more than the Boost guys are doing, and they kind of pioneered that great kind of concept, and it works pretty well.
Nice.
In practice. So let me go through a couple of the...
Yes.
Let me just write some of the operators out. So I'm going to try to remember it. Eric had a nice talk on Channel 9 where he went through these. You've got a single element that you transform into a stream. I'm going to say everything's vectors for now.
Okay.
But these aren't necessarily random access. It could be a standard list. It could be a standard map. Anything that's iterable. And so now... I have a vector of elements, and this could be the function return, let me capitalize it there because it's keywords, that turns a single element into a vector of a single element. You're going to say that's kind of crazy, but this will make sense later on when we start composing different link operators. You've also got empty, which goes from nothing to produce a empty pseudo vector of any element type. These are your constructors. You can also use any of the standard containers as your constructor.
Hmm.
And we enter into the Link world with a single function call from on your vector. Now this thing is a pseudo vector.
Hmm.
It's got extra member functions. So I can call begin on it, and it's just forwards to the original iterators. Or I can, this is where the operators come in, I can now say from v select and now I've got a pseudo vector of squared integers. By returning a value here, this is our value, I think, by returning a value here instead of a reference, I've gone from a pseudo vector of integer objects to a pseudo vector of integer values. I can no longer take the address of this thing because the compiler will complain to me, you cannot take an address of a temporary, things like that. So so if I tried to do this, compiler complains validly. I tried to take the bind a reference to the first element of the vector dereferenced here, and it's going to go, that's not kosher. You've got a temporary value. That gets into auto reference capture. Little intricacies of C++ language. Sorry about that. But yeah, if I do this, address of, and have, you know, a pointer, you know, this is illegal. You can't take the address of an R value. Everything blows up. But so all of these little C++ intricacies flow through C++ link. So select allows us to transform a container. We might not want all the elements. So we can follow that up with a predicate that says, all the values greater than 3. And select out some of the elements. So now we have a sequence that has fewer elements.
Great.
We've lost our random access, though. Because if I have the sequence 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, this is going to put in, you know, at offsets 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. The output sequence is going to be 4, 5. Like, there's no longer correspondence between the input sequence indexes and the output sequence indexes. So we squared the thing, keeping those correspondences. You know, the element 0 corresponds to element 0 here, and then we lose it when we do that where clause. So this thing degrades naturally. If you have a random access iterator, performs a filter, you're left now with a forward access iterator. Mm. It can only forward, or there's an option to go bidirectional. Little details as to the differences there.
That's
we don't
good.
Need to worry about it.
Details are good.
But so these are kind of very simple query operations. That might be enough for you, depending on what you're doing. But then we start getting into the power of link, where I can start doing kind of join operations between different sets. And then here I can put in, you know, some sort of key selector. I'm going to start abbreviating. I have a key selector for this, the second container. And this thing is going to be returning us something that has a type that is a vector of pair E1, E2. Whatever the type of this guy's elements, where the keys that we selected from those elements, you know, like say we use the first letter of a string, where those keys equal, return me all of the inner product pairs of elements with equal keys from each set. This thing returns you a sequence that maintains a lot of state. An iterator in this thing actually has a position in which input, where it is in the left input stream, where it is in the right input stream, and a cache of where to backtrack to when we finish a particular set of matches. This operator can either be executed immediately, building a large dictionary, and then giving you iterations out of those.
Okay.
Or it can be on the fly, generating more keys as you iterate forward. Right now, we only have the ahead of time, the immediate mode. So what this goes and does is creates a hash table, takes a shared pointer to it, and then gives you an iterator that wraps accessing elements to that that hash table, grabbing the original iterators back and producing pairs of them. So if I have here a pseudo vector that has element references, so like a vector gives me the ability to address individual objects in it, not just their values, then I will actually get out of here a pair. This guy's E2 reference. I'll actually get pairs of references to these guys, so that I can go and modify if I want the original elements.
Great.
Again, this is a very C++-like facility of taking an iterator and using it to modify the original container instead of just reading it. There are also higher order operations. Group by gives you a iterator of iterators or ranges of ranges of elements where you've taken subsets that all share the same key from the original container and are viewing those. So why don't we pull up some of the code?
Yes, but let me ask you a question now. Yeah. So, or make sort of a, you know, add some a statement on top of this. In some sense, link to objects is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is that, I mean, when we first started doing link, releasing it out in the wild, the whole thing was there's an impedance mismatch between programming data and, you know, writing imperative code or writing the code you're used to writing. And so this is great to see for C++. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we do live in a world of data and a world of objects and collections of objects. This is a beautiful syntax to use, a pattern to use, in my opinion, for dealing in this world of objects and data. So whatever. Yep. I just wanted to throw that out there. So thank you for doing this, man.
Yep. And just one other fun feature I want to point out here on the whiteboard is, so we've got this these wrappers, and these are all member functions, and I can hear some of the people in the audience screaming, oh no, because they're member functions, you can't overload them. Like, what if I have a database connection and want to do that whole link to databases? Select is now going to try to return me iterators. No, I want it to push a query out there. We're working on that. What this guy does is, like I said, it gives you a pseudo vector. It gives you something that's pseudo iterable. And the way that it does that is the select operator actually goes and forwards, uses the type inference that's available in C++11 to forward to a free function link underscore select. And we've got definitions of that that overload a couple of overloads for different iterator types. It goes and looks at the thing and looks to see if it has iterators, begin and end, and it creates iterators that have this. It clones the traits of those iterators.
Okay.
But if the thing doesn't have iterators, if begin and end don't return iterators, it'll actually the template matches will fail. And select you'll get when you go to compile it. If you try to call from int select, it'll fail and say no template overload of link underscore select was found that matched. This is kind of like extension methods in C#. It uses argument-dependent lookup to figure out which overload of select to use. And if you have your own container type and want to define what select means for that container, all you need to do is define a function, link select, in the same namespace as your container. It'll automatically pick that up and produce pseudo iterators that match your iterators.
Awesome.
Or... You don't even need to use iterators at all. Like whatever begin and end return, it can forward to those, or it can just the original container can just hold your whatever your link select returned, hold it in that pseudo container to forward to more of your own operators. If you don't have iterators, begin and end on the result won't work, but you'll be able to get the result back out.
Excellent. Now one last quick thing before we look at code, I want to keep on the implementation side. Because it's interesting. Clearly, you know, you mentioned you're using Lambda, so you're using modern C++. What else are you using in your implementation?
So the implementation doesn't actually use Lambdas at all.
Okay.
We've got a couple of placeholders in there because you can write select many or use select many to write group bys and joins and the like. And we've got some placeholders there just going to speed the work along. But each of the individual operators instead just creates function objects that maintain the right state. Lambdas are for the user to use.
Understood.
So you can put whatever function object you want here. A function pointer, a normal functor that you can create by hand in C++. Anything will work there as long as it is copy or move constructible and implements the operator function call.
Okay. And of course, this is all template based.
Yep.
And are you doing anything with the modern move semantics, right? R value references?
Yeah, so internally, we try to use move wherever possible. So if we have a value that's coming in and we need to store a copy of it, but the user doesn't necessarily need to, like with the Lambda, we automatically detect whether or not it's move constructible and pull the value across.
Great. Thank you. Awesome. All right, let's look at code, man.
All right, so we've got here a sample from Project Euler, one of my favorite little sample sites It's got a bunch of little math problems for you. Great for demoing any kind of programming language tools, etc. So we've got to find the greatest product of five consecutive digits in a 1,000-digit number. So if we were to grab like these five digits, count to five, it starts with zero. Zero times anything is going to be zero. That's not a good candidate. But one times nine is nine, times two, 18, etc. Find the largest such product, big number. So first, this is C++, so I'm going to use a little bit of pointer magic to save me some time. So I'm going to create an int range that goes through all of the indexes where a valid five-digit number can start. So all of the characters, and then minus five to take off the last four characters in null terminator. So there's my range indexes. I'm going to choose products by selecting from this range, select char array plus that offset. That's going to give me a char star into the array starting at a five-digit number. And then where the taking five characters from that starting point, where it does not contain a zero, get rid of anything that contains zeros, just early optimization, then select, using that same char star again, choose those five characters, select for each character, we're going to convert it from a character to an integer. So by subtracting 0, ASCII, 1 is one index higher than 0, 2, etc. And then aggregate, I'm going to take that sequence of numbers that I've got now, the digits, and take the product of that sequence. This guy will then return an integer selected from that range. If I also wanted to remember where it was, I could return a pair that was the char star and the product. And then I just use the link operator max to find the biggest one.
Nice.
Likewise, if I use the pair, I could put a selector in there that grabbed the second element of the pair, find the biggest second element of the pair. And we print out the result. Let's see if I can run this guy here for you. So we go bin retail sample. Here we go. Oh, wrong sample. All right. So this is actually one of our unit tests. And we've got our result right here, 4,824, which I checked was right.
40,000.
Or 40,000, yeah, 40,824.
You did check that that's right. Right on, yeah. That was fast.
So yeah, it's, well, you didn't even see it go by because, you know, it's so fast. I've also got that thing running in a loop so we can see how fast this thing is running. And it's actually making solutions, we'll get the little result out here. Nearly 8,000 solutions a second using cool. that link library. And of course, each time it's going through, it's actually doing five passes of 1,000, approximately 1,000 elements.
Sure.
So we're doing tens, hundreds of millions of operations here.
And you're still not done optimizing your library, right?
Correct. And so I've gone through this. There's a couple of places where we're not hitting the optimizer just right. So we're tweaking that a bit. Especially around whenever you get pointers involved. C++ hates pointers because the compiler has to assume the worst. Like, maybe it's null, maybe it's the same object, maybe it's a different one. So we're working out those little kinks. But I compared this number against the same code written in C# using string buffers and indexes instead of pointers so that we don't make any copies. And the thing, this guy ran about four times faster.
Of course. Right on.
Because, of course, it's doing, like, there's all that inlining, and in C#, everything is interface dispatch. Here, it's optional. So we've got two modes. There's an operator you can explicitly invoke on any of these virtual vectors that'll convert it from that giant templated thing of, you know, virtual vector of select of some lambda of some where of some lambda of some original container, and convert that into virtual or pseudo vector of interface.
Sure.
And then you take the virtual dispatch, but get much more compact code gen.
Now, in C#, of course, you could do this in an unsafe block and play around with pointers directly.
You could, but you still don't have templates.
Of course not. That's true. You have generics, but not the template kind.
Yeah.
Not the compile time.
Yeah.
Kind. Understood. Rock and roll, man.
All right. So, the wrong demo I pulled up. let's do that guy. So, let me just show you the program first. We've got. Let's see. We had a sample file data. So I've got some raw results from a performance benchmark I was running on a separate project. And these are all just, you know, memory measurements, the level of concurrency that we were testing, and the eventual, you know, the time that the test took. And I went, you know, I don't want to just deal through the raw numbers. I want to see kind of how the results in a nice table that I can make graphs of. My boss likes graphs. So, you know how Eric is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I'm going to go pull up this program. And let's make that big for you. And again, do my from some results, select. I'm taking the data, loading it as a vector of lines. Then I'm going to select from each line, I'm going to construct an item where I pull out of that line a number of fields, the arguments to the test, the concurrency level, and the time. That way I can correlate time and concurrency level.
Great.
And after I do that select, I do to vector, which is my kind of like the link to list. It runs the enumerable immediately, producing a new vector, a new copy of the data. I then say that my data is loaded, and this is where we get into our group by. I take the data, group by the command line arguments used to run the test. I've got two different command line arguments. And then for each, we go back to iterators because, you know, it just happens to be convenient. For each group, grab the key from the group, print out some formatting data, and then within each group, group by another coordinate, and then select the times out of those groups, accumulate the results, print out the average. So when we go and run this guy, we get nice tabular data we can put into Excel. The concurrency level, the mean time, and then the raw data if anyone wants to, you know, replicate our tables, you know, make sure all of our math adds up. So there we go. And we can see that this thing, in fact, of course, got faster the more concurrency we introduced.
Awesome. Now, of course, this is compiling on VC11, so you're getting some auto vectorization here.
Oh, am I?
Cool. Yes, you are. And actually, I wish Jim Radigan was here.
Oh.
Because I'd like to have him see that loop and then explain exactly how he's going to go about auto-vectorizing it, because he's the one.
Yeah, because we've got, and I've got accumulate called explicitly here, but yeah. our max function and accumulate function, they actually thunk down to the C++ standard library where the operation's available.
Awesome.
So if they've got auto-vectorization on the standard library, well, we'll just get it for free.
Yeah, well, that's the beautiful thing about auto. Auto, man. Not the auto we're looking at there, but that's a beautiful auto, too.
Okay.
Although I do wonder sometimes about the proliferation of auto. Like, I look at that, and maybe I want to know what type it is. Anyway.
Well, I can tell you right here.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can get IntelliSense. It was doing it for me the other day. Yeah, IntelliSense is telling you this thing. Well, you can't see it right there. Right here it says link driver bracket and dot, dot, dot.
There's rock and roll.
This giant type name in there. I printed one out once, and after just doing three link operations, the type name was, I think, 500 characters long.
Cool.
So yeah, you'll want to, if you've got really big queries, you'll want to thunk out to the interface.
This is really, really great to see. The question I have to ask now is, when can people play with this, and can they play with it? Are you going to put it out online or what?
We're doing what we can. We're looking into all that, but we can't say anything right now.
I understand. So we're teasing you, my friends, but the point of the matter is this is being worked on. It looks beautiful. It looks great. I mean, one of the other great things about Link is it's composable.
Yep.
That's not something we hear a lot in C++.
Yeah, so we've got select many, group by, and then we've got all the fun family of functions that fold out from that.
Making monads easy, man. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so let's continue on.
So we've got, I've got another thing I can show you here, which is we're also experimenting for an unrelated project, RX for C.
For C?
For C.
Okay.
And you're going to go, well, wait a minute, what's that even going to look like? And we've got a kind of a sample here right now where we're hooking it up to WMI, which is a C, which has a C-based API. And, you mm-hmm. know, all of the lots of global functions and handles and nothing automatic.
Okay.
And you know, you can, some people use macros to do all the error handling because you don't have RAII, right?
No. Can you bump up the font, please?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No worries.
Here
Thank
we go.
You.
So, ooh, look, we create an application, a session, and we're going to go look at, you know, we're going to do some aggregation of thread events, right?
Okay.
But and this is all public API. It's if you just search on MSDN for MI session, you can find MI underscore session. You can find all the documentation. But we're just using that as a test, a test API to hook up to validate that what we're doing makes sense.
So now I missed the initial introduction because mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm in the room. I was listening.
But
why C?
Why C?
Did you mention that yet?
Well, the people we're working with are looking for C.
Understood, and we don't have to really get into that. That's not important. But the fact of the matter is, if it's C, big deal. If you can still use it from C++. You can use lambdas, auto, and everything else.
And I'm going to get you there because C.
Why?
Because C. So in C, you've got to pass all of these. All of the. Hold on. You got to pass your closures explicitly.
Okay.
So I've got my. Let me find it here. I've got my callback and null because I didn't need a closure.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I'm going to have to pass a closure there, and it's going to have, I'm going to pass function pointers that say how to copy it and destroy it, and it's going to get all very tedious. So I can see that you're getting anxious here.
No, it's cool.
So
C happens to be the most widely used programming language in the world.
I got a solution for you.
All right. Good.
We've got a C++ wrapper for it. So you don't even need to know about all that C mumbo jumbo. If you pass a lambda and it's stateless, we convert it to a function pointer.
Mm-hmm.
If you pass a lambda that has state, like smart pointers and so forth,
mm-hmm.
We'll automatically create a closure for you, figure out the right reference the lifetime management, because of course, C++, we're using templates to generate all those callbacks.
Excellent.
So I've got a placeholder here. I don't have the WMI event stream, but you know, mm-hmm. I create a range of integers from 0 to 100. And I can now do where is prime, which is just a function pointer, select with a lambda, and get all that nice goodness. The only difference between link for C++ mm-hmm. and RX for C++ is instead of saying begin end, you subscribe.
To the observable.
To the observable.
Yes.
And the elements from that sequence are pushed to you.
Beautiful.
I can't pull them with begin and end,
Yeah, reference. You don't want to do that, man.
But yeah, the reason you want to do this is it gets very powerful for, you can now get asynchrony by default.
And you can blast over giant streams of data using super high performance.
You don't need to get threads involved. Because what do you do if you iterate forward but the elements aren't ready? You block, right? So,
nice.
Yeah, so otherwise it's the same thing all the way, all the way on the surface, same API set, same member functions, and we're even looking into how to do the same kind of ADL lookup so we can get overloading.
Nice.
But under the covers, now this all wraps, the primary implementation wraps C instead of wrapping templates.
Great. So, if it's not clear enough out there, people watching, you get RX for C, C++, and of course, because underneath all of that, you have link. You have to have link operators. You have to have link semantics.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, man. I can't wait to play with this. It looks great. Nice.
I'm really eager to hear, too, what people think of RX and link for C. Because we've got a couple people interested. But I actually have very little knowledge about what C programming looks like these days. Because so many people say, oh, I program in C and C++. They mean C++.
Sure.
So what does that mean? What do you want in C, in a C library?
Great. Well, this is going native. This is the show. And C is a first-class citizen.
Yeah.
We always pimp C++ hard because, that's what Microsoft produces. build one of the best compilers in the world for C++. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we ship a product called Visual C++, which, of course, you can also program in C. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole with C99 crap.
Oh,
but
yeah,
listen,
yeah, all that.
We're being conscious of that. You're making RX for the lingua franca of native code, which is C. And so, as you said, you built a wrapper for C++ people to consume, mm-hmm. so they don't have to go down to the C level. But if you're a C++ developer, C is not something that scares you. If it does, that's concerning. So,
I don't know. I don't know if you've seen Straustrup's Programming Principles and Practice, I think it was called, something like that. He wrote a pure C++ book.
I see.
Introduction to Programming.
Yes, of course.
No C. And the code in there is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, if that's how I had learned C++, I wouldn't stand a chance in C, because there's just so much the language does for you.
Absolutely.
And so I wouldn't have been prepared.
Understood. I mean, and C essentially, I mean, let's be honest, C killed assembler for the most part. And not that
C... Like it defined processors, right?
There you go. So, I mean, look, modern C++ is definitely the highest level native code has been in a while. One could argue.
I don't want to alienate our C friends, though.
No, but, don't. Yeah. Well, like I was saying earlier, C is the most widely used programming language in the world,
mm-hmm.
right? Embedded systems, operating system kernels.
Yeah, there's a lot of C code in Windows.
Most code in Windows happens to be C. I shouldn't say that. I don't know that that's the case. I know in the kernel, it's absolutely true.
Yeah, yeah, because there's, you know, all those nice facilities that C++ gives you, well, they're a little hard to work in when you don't necessarily even have memory to work with.
Absolutely. So I'm going to stir this back into the point of this conversation. What's next? Like, what are some of the things you're working on in this vein? I mean, you've already clearly gotten a lot accomplished, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
RX, you know, as a whole, is very complicated. I mean, in some sense, you have iObservable, you have iQobservable. You have all this crazy stuff that those guys have done with duality. So how would I, like, you know, you're going to have to, you get together with Bart and geek out on this and figure out what you're going to add to yours.
Yeah, yeah. So we were just geeking out the other day, for instance, in C, it's a pain to write lambdas because you have to write a separate function somewhere and the whole closure business gets to be quite painful. So we're looking at maybe, I don't know, throwing a bytecode system in there to, so that, not for all the time, but just mm-hmm. for the stuff that's not performance critical, maybe we can write the code for you. You can have inline lambdas as strings or something. We're thinking about how C++ templates could play a part in RX for C, because mm-hmm. The C layer is all virtual, or not virtual, but all function pointer dispatch, so indirect dispatch, non-inlineable, how we can get that integrated, how threading plays a part in RX and traditional link when you do iteration versus push.
Mm.
How do you bridge those two?
Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know, what do people want to use this for? We know a lot now about how RX for JavaScript is used, mm-hmm. And that it's been out there for a little while. But we learned a lot in the process of getting that out there.
Sure.
So.
But look, I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, the beautiful thing is if you're going to build a general purpose library for, you know, intensive asynchronous computing over streams of data, which is what RX is,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of good to be able to give those people who don't know C#, who don't know JavaScript, who don't know VB.NET, etc., give them an opportunity to use it in their native language, speak their native tongue,
mm-hmm.
and get the power of RX. So to me, the most beautiful thing about this is now C++ developers are part of the RX world. Mm-hmm. They're going to actually, we're going to see boundaries being pushed. So,
well, I mean, you might be, what if you're coding in on Arduino boards, right?
Yeah.
You can't run C# there.
Really? I thought you could write the micro framework stuff.
Well, some of the larger ones have. They have an Arduino for C#.
But like, your point is for embedded systems.
If you're on the 8-bit Arduinos, like if you're on this embedded system, you might not have a CLR. You might not have the space for one. or it might not have been ported yet.
And so, sure.
Well, if RX for C is something you might be able to use out of the box. So we're looking to see where we might take that.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you. It's great to meet you.
Anytime.
Aaron. Hey, we're going to come back and talk to you. I mean, you're the native guy on Eric's team, man.
That's what they keep telling me.
But that's a beautiful thing. You got lots of skills. I see you on the internal aliases, answering questions and dicing with people. It's beautiful, man. So we'll come back and see you.
All right. Anytime.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Rock and roll, man. RxC implemented in C. I love it. I highly recommend that you play around with it once you can get it. But most importantly, and I think the key to this episode is, there really is an investment in taking some of the wonderful things that have been developed for different runtimes and different languages and to bring them into the native world in this, the year 2012. So rock and roll. We'll see you next month.